Hello, today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an article from the Associated Press World News. The title, U.S. and Iran agree to a two-week ceasefire as Trump pulls back on threats, by Bassem Moreau, John Gambrell, and Sammy Magdy, updated 11:10 p.m., April 7th, 2026. Tehran, Iran. U.S. President Donald Trump pulled back on his threats to launch devastating strikes on Iran late Tuesday, as the U.S. and Iran agreed to a two-week ceasefire that includes the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. Trump swerved to de-escalate the war less than 2 hours before the deadline he set for Tehran to capitulate to a deal or face attacks on its bridges and power plants meant to destroy Iranian civilization. Iran's Supreme National Security Council said it has accepted the ceasefire and that it would negotiate with the United States in Pakistan beginning Friday. Neither Iran nor the United States said when the ceasefire would begin, and attacks took place in Israel, Iran, and across the Gulf region early Wednesday. Israel backed the U.S. ceasefire with Iran, but the deal doesn't cover fighting against Hezbollah in Lebanon, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said early Wednesday. His office said in a statement that Israel supported Trump's decision to suspend strikes subject to Iran immediately opening the Strait of Hormuz and stopping all attacks on the U.S., Israel, and countries in the region. His office said Israel also supports U.S. efforts to ensure Iran no longer poses a nuclear or missile threat. The ceasefire calls for Israel and Hezbollah to halt fighting in Lebanon, according to the Prime Minister of Pakistan, which has been mediating talks. The ceasefire process was clouded in uncertainty after Iran released different versions of the 10-point plan intended to be the basis for negotiations. The version in Farsi included the phrase acceptance of enrichment for its nuclear program, but for reasons that remain unclear, that phrase was missing in English versions shared by Iranian diplomats to journalists. Trump initially had said Iran proposed a workable 10-point plan that could help end the war launched by the U.S. and Israel in February. But he later called it fraudulent without elaborating. Trump has said ending Iran's nuclear program entirely was a key point of the war. Pro-government demonstrators in the streets of Iran's capital screamed, "Death to America! Death to Israel, death to compromisers." After the ceasefire announcement Wednesday morning, they also burned American and Israeli flags in the street. It shows the ongoing anger from hardliners who had been preparing for what many assumed would be an apocalyptic battle with the United States. Iran and Oman to collect shipping fees in Strait of Hormuz. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said passage through the strait would be allowed under Iranian military management. It wasn't immediately clear whether that meant Iran would completely loosen its chokehold on the waterway. The plan allows for both Iran and Oman to charge fees on ships traveling, transiting through the strait, according to a regional official who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss negotiations they were directly involved in. The official said Iran would use the money it raised for reconstruction. In addition to control of the strait, Iran's demands for ending the war include withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from the region, the lifting of sanctions, and the release of its frozen assets. Since the war began, Trump has repeatedly backed off deadlines just before they expire. In doing so again Tuesday, Trump said in a social media post he had come to the decision based on conversations with Pakistan Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and General Azman Munir, Pakistan's powerful army chief. Sharif, in a post on X hours earlier, urged Trump to extend his deadline by 2 weeks to allow diplomacy to advance. He used the same post to ask Iran to open the strait for 2 weeks. Almost all of the various points of past contention have been agreed to between the United States and Iran, but a 2-week period will allow the agreement to be finalized and consummated, Trump said. There are concerns in Israel about the agreement, according to a person familiar with the situation, who spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not allowed to speak to the media. The person said Israel would like to achieve more. Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium is still buried at enrichment sites. The program had been one of the main issues cited by both Israel and the U.S. in launching the war. Earlier, Trump threats raised alarms. A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again, if a deal isn't reached, Trump said in an online post Tuesday morning. But he also seemed to keep open the possibility of an off-ramp, saying that maybe something revolutionarily wonderful can happen. Trump's expansive threat did not seem to account for potential harm to civilians, prompting Democrats in Congress, some United Nations officials, and scholars in military law to say such strikes would violate international law. Tehran's representatives at the UN, Amir Saeed Arvani, said the threats constitute incitement to war crimes and potentially genocide, and that Iran would take immediate and proportionate reciprocal measures if Trump launches devastating strikes. The U.S. and Israel have battered Iran with attacks targeting its military capabilities, leadership, and nuclear program. Iran has responded with a stream of strikes on Israel and Gulf Arab neighbors, causing regional chaos and outsized economic and political shock. Late Tuesday, Pakistan's prime minister urged Trump to extend his deadline by 2 weeks to allow diplomacy to advance. in a post on X, Shahbaz Sharif, whose country has been leading negotiations, also asked Iran to open up for 2 weeks the Strait of Hormuz. China, which is Tehran's biggest trade partner, encouraged the Iranians to find a way to a ceasefire as talks progressed, according to two officials who were not authorized to comment publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity. Before the deadline, airstrikes hit 2 bridges and a train station, and the U.S. hit military infrastructure on Karg Island, a key hub for Iranian oil production. While Iran cannot match the sophistication of U.S. and Israeli weaponry or their dominance in the air, its chokehold on the strait since the war began in late February is roiling the world economy and raising the pressure on Trump, both at home and abroad, to find a way out of the standoff. Airstrikes hit Iran, which fires on Saudi Arabia and Israel. Even as the ceasefire was announced, missile alerts continued in the United Arab Emirates, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and Kuwait early Wednesday, hinting at the chaos surrounding the diplomatic moves. A gas processing facility in Abu Dhabi was ablaze after incoming Iranian fire, officials said. Israel was continuing its attacks on Iran, said an Israeli military official who spoke on condition of anonymity in line with military regulations. Iran also kept up fire on Israel. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from World News. The title, Netanyahu Authorizes Direct Talks with Lebanon as Soon as Possible, by John Gambrell, Elena Bicatros, and Mike Corder. Updated, 11:52 a.m., April 9th, 2026. Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Thursday that he has authorized direct negotiations with Lebanon as soon as possible as a tentative ceasefire in the Iran war staggered under the weight of Israel's bombardment of Beirut. Netanyahu said he gave the order in response to requests from Lebanon and that talks would focus on disarming Hezbollah and establishing peaceful relations between the neighboring countries. He welcomed a call by Lebanon's prime minister to demilitarize Beirut. There was no immediate response from Lebanon. The ceasefire was also hampered by Tehran's continued chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz and uncertainty over whether planned peace talks can find common ground. Iran and the U.S., which both declared victory after the ceasefire announcement, appeared to apply pressure. Semi-official news agencies in Iran suggested forces have mined the Strait of Hormuz, a crucial waterway for oil that Tehran has closed. President Donald Trump, meanwhile, warned that U.S. forces would hit Iran harder than before if it did not fulfill the agreement. And there was disagreement whether the ceasefire deal included a pause in fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. Israel on Wednesday pounded Beirut with airstrikes, resulting in the deadliest day in Lebanon since the war began on February 28th. Questions also remained over what will happen to Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium at the heart of tensions, how and when normal traffic will resume through the strait, and what happens to Iran's ability to launch future missile attacks and support armed proxies in the region. Despite the fragile and disputed nature of the ceasefire, it appeared to have halted weeks of missile and drone attacks by Iran on its Gulf Arab neighbors and Israel, with no new launches reported Thursday. There were no reports of strikes by the U.S. or Israel targeting Iran. Israeli vows to continue striking Hezbollah in Lebanon. Iran's parliament speaker, Mohammed Bagher Qalabaf, warned Thursday that continued Israeli attacks on the Iran-backed Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon would bring explicit costs and strong responses in a social media post. Qalabaf has been discussed as a possible negotiator who could meet U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance this weekend in Islamabad. The White House has said Vance would lead the delegation for talks starting Saturday. Iran said Israel was violating the ceasefire agreement. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Trump have said it was not. Netanyahu said Israel will continue striking Hezbollah with force, precision, and determination. Lebanon's health ministry said at least 203 people were killed and more than 1,000 wounded Wednesday in Israeli strikes in central Beirut and other areas of Lebanon that Israel said targeted Hezbollah, which joined the war in support of Tehran. Israel said Thursday that it killed an aide to Hezbollah leader Naam Qassem. Ali Yusuf Hashi, Hezbollah, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. A New York-based think tank warned that the ceasefire hovers on the verge of collapse. Even if Lebanon was formally outside the deal, the scale of Israel's strikes was likely to be viewed as escalatory, the Soufan Center wrote in an analysis. Israel's strikes can be understood both as an effort to drive a wedge between Iran and its proxies and as a response to being allegedly sidelined in the original ceasefire discussions. Lebanon's state-run national news agency reported that an Israeli strike overnight killed at least 7 people in southern Lebanon. The Israeli military did not immediately acknowledge the strike. Oil prices remain high amid uncertainty over the strait. Semi-official news agencies in Iran published a chart Thursday suggesting the country's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard put sea mines into the Strait of Hormuz during the war, a message that may be intended to pressure the United States. The chart, released by the ISNA news agency and TASNIM, showed a large circle marked danger zone in Farsi over the route ships take through the strait, through which 20% of all traded oil and natural gas once passed. Only a trickle of ships have transited since the war began after several were attacked and Iran threatened to hit any that it deemed connected to the U.S. or Israel. Ships appeared to continue to avoid the strait even after the ceasefire. The chart suggested that ships travel through waters closer to Iran's mainland near Larak Island, a route that some ships were observed taking during the war. It was dated from February 28th until April 9th, and it was unclear if the guard had cleared any mines since then. Iran's deputy foreign minister, Saeed Katzbitsta, told the BBC that his country will allow ships to pass through the strait in accordance with international norms and international law once the United States ends its aggression in the Middle East and Israel stops attacking Lebanon. The head of the United Arab Emirates major oil company, Sultan Al Jaber, said some 230 ships loaded with oil were waiting to get through the strait and must be allowed to navigate this corridor without condition. The strait's de facto closure has caused oil prices to skyrocket, affecting the cost of gasoline, food, and other basics far beyond the Middle East. Oil prices fell Wednesday on news of the ceasefire, but climbed again as uncertainty over the deal grew. The spot price of Brent crude, the international standard, was around $98 Thursday, up about 35% since the war began. Points to address in talks include whether Iran will be allowed to formalize a system of charging ships to use the strait that would upend decades of free transit through what has been treated as an international waterway. The fate of Iran's enriched uranium remains a question. The fate of Iran's missile and nuclear programs, which the U.S. and Israel sought to eliminate in going to war, also remained unclear. The U.S. insists Iran must never be able to build nuclear weapons and wants to remove Tehran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium, which could be used to build them. Iran insists its program is peaceful. Trump said Wednesday that the U.S. would work with Iran to remove the uranium buried in last year's U.S. and Israeli strikes, though Iran did not confirm that. In one version of the ceasefire deal that Iran published, it said it would be allowed to continue enrichment. The chief of Iran's nuclear agency, Mohammad Islami, said Thursday that protecting Tehran's right to enrich uranium is necessary for any ceasefire talks. Trump warned that U.S. warships and troops will remain around Iran until such time as the real agreement reached is fully complied with. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. News. The title, West Virginia Governor Vetoes Help for Neglected and Foster Kids After Approving Tax Cuts, by Henry Kulvhaus and Erica Peterson. Updated April 6, 2026. Governor Patrick Morrisey vetoed a handful of bills meant to help vulnerable West Virginians just days after signing a 5% reduction to the personal income tax. Between the tax cut and aligning some of the state's business taxes with cuts made by the Trump administration, the state will be forgoing $230 million in revenue annually, but the governor balked at the expense of providing help for foster children aging out of the system, home blood pressure monitoring to Medicaid patients, or research into new drug treatment options. In all, he vetoed a dozen bills. Both the bill to help foster kids transition out of care and another vetoed bill focused on preventing them from ending up there would likely have saved the state money in the long run. The foster care transition bill, which passed both the House and Senate with nearly unanimous approval, would have expanded a statewide pilot program that offers former foster kids help with independent living, finding work, or enrolling in higher education. A Mountain State Spotlight investigation published last year found the state was failing to spend federal money meant to help former foster kids, and many were unaware of the independent living services the state provides. Morrisey's Department of Human Services estimated the bill would cost about $11 million when fully implemented. Morrisey wrote in his veto letter that the bill contains uncontrollable cost drivers. The problem is that the bill requires the Department of Human Services to expand services that are already being offered through its independent living and transitional living programs, and this expansion will cost at least $5 million in the first year, he wrote. As bill sponsor, Delegate Adam Berkhammer, Republican Lewis, pointed out, or Representative Lewis pointed out during a February committee meeting, not providing these kids with support now will likely mean more expensive problems in the future. If we're not going to support housing them here, there's a high probability we're going to be housing them in one of our jails or prisons, he said. While he didn't cite cost as a reason, Morrisey also vetoed a bill aimed at preventing kids from entering foster care in the first place. An economic need does not translate to abuse and neglect, and it is disconcerting to see that kind of linkage here. The insertion of the state into the family should only occur when children are truly at risk, he wrote. But research does show that impoverished families are more likely to have their kids removed because poverty is often misperceived as neglect. That's why researchers often advocate for measures that raise families out of poverty as a way to help overall child welfare. I think anti-poverty policy is child protection policy, UC Irvine sociology professor Kelly Fong told Mountain State Spotlight earlier this year. Every year, more than 1,000 West Virginia kids are removed from their parents solely because of neglect, according to federal data. Another 200 are removed only because of inadequate housing. The governor also vetoed legislation that mandated the release of funds collected by the state's medical marijuana program, $5 million of which would have funded a commission to help with thousands of child abuse and neglect court cases. Morrissey's office said that his administration is trying to both meet needs of vulnerable populations and cut taxes. He said several vetoes were because costs of the programs were open-ended or lacked a clear focus. Families are dealing with higher costs across the board, and letting them keep more of what they earn is one of the most direct ways we can help, spokesman Lars Delaside wrote in an email. The West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy estimates 80% of the state's population will receive between $4 and $144.50 a year from the income tax cut. And while aligning the state taxes with federal taxes would increase the child care tax credits, it's mostly businesses that are seeing the relief. Morrissey's office said that his administration is trying to both meet needs of vulnerable populations and cut taxes. He said several vetoes were because costs of the programs were open-ended or lacked a clear focus. Families are dealing with higher costs across the board, and letting them keep more of what they earn is one of the most direct ways we can help, spokesman Lars Delaside wrote in an email. The West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy estimates 80% of the state's population will receive the $4 and $144.50 a year from the income tax break. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their Fact Check section by Paul Wiseman, John Gambrell, and Calvin Woodward, updated April 1st, 2026, Washington. President Donald Trump mischaracterized core elements of the U.S. economy and stretched the facts in claiming to have toppled Iran's government as he addressed the nation Wednesday night in a time of soaring gas prices and persistent inflation. Here's a look at some of his statements. no inflation claim. We were a dead and crippled country after the last administration, and it made it the hottest country anywhere in the world by far, with no inflation. The facts. This is a standard Trump claim, but the economy he inherited was far from weak. In 2024, the last year of Joe Biden's presidency, American gross domestic product grew 2.8%, adjusted for inflation, faster than any wealthy country in the world except Spain. It also expanded at a healthy rate from 2021 through 2023. Last year, in fact, U.S. economic growth decelerated under Trump to a still respectable 2.1%, partly because the 43-day federal government shutdown slashed growth from October through December. Nor has inflation vanished. The Labor Department's Consumer Price Index was up 2.4% in February compared with a year earlier. It's still above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. Claim: regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change. But regime change has occurred because of all their original leaders' death. They're all dead. The new group is less radical and much more reasonable. The facts. Trump's depiction of the people now in charge in Iran after scores of senior leaders were killed in the war stretches credulity. Israel's airstrike at the start of the war, February 28th, killed Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Iran then installed his son, Mojtaba, who is viewed as even more hardline, as supreme leader. The month-long war has seen Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard grow even more ascendant. Iran's civilian leadership, broadly untouched by the war, acknowledges it has little command and control over the Guard's actions. Both Trump and Israel have signaled they would tell the Iranian people to rise up at a point in the war to take back their government. That hasn't happened. Claim: this murderous regime also recently killed 45,000 of their own people who were protesting in Iran. The fact: a death toll that high has not been verified. The U.S.-based group Human Rights Activist News Agency, which has been accurate in multiple rounds of demonstrations in Iran, said it confirmed the deaths of just over 7,000 people in the nationwide protests that reached their apex in January. However, it said thousands more may have been killed, though internet and communication restrictions in Iran since have made verifying the reports incredibly difficult. It put total arrests at more than 53,000. Iran's government, which long has played down death tolls in other unrest, offered its only toll on January 21st, saying 3,117 people were killed. Trump previously said that at least 32,000 people were killed in January protests, which is at the far end of estimates offered by activists for the death toll. He offered no evidence to support those figures. This is how the AP reports on the death toll from Iran's protests. Claim, we're now totally independent of the Middle East, and yet we are there to help. We don't have to be there. We don't need their oil. The facts. It's true that the United States is by far the world's leading producer of oil and relies on the Persian Gulf for a fraction, 8.5% in 2025, of the oil it imports. But, as is obvious at U.S. gas pumps, that doesn't mean it is unaffected by the turmoil in the Middle East. Oil is a commodity, the price of which is set in a global market, University of Chicago energy analyst Sam Ori said before Trump's speech, and a disruption anywhere affects the price everywhere, which is why the price of benchmark U.S. crude oil is up more than 50% since the Iran war began, and the average price of U.S. gallon of gasoline cracked $4 a gallon this week. Claim, Trump cited record-setting investments coming into the United States over $18 trillion. The facts, Trump has presented no evidence that he's secured this much domestic or foreign investment in the U.S. based on statements from various companies, foreign countries, and the White House's own website. That figure appears to be exaggerated, highly speculative, and far higher than the actual sum. The White House website offers a far lower number, $10.5 trillion, and that figure appears to include some investment commitments made during the Biden administration. A study published in January raised doubts about whether more than $5 trillion in investment commitments made last year by many of America's biggest trading partners will actually materialize, and questions how it would be spent if it did. Claim, Obama gave them $1.7 billion in cash. The facts, this misleading claim that President Barack Obama handed over cash to the Iranians dates back to Trump's first term and persists in his second. The U.S. Treasury did not pay Iran roughly that amount under Obama. But it was not a gift. Excuse me, let me repeat that. The U.S. Treasury did pay Iran roughly that amount under Obama, but it was not a gift. Rather, it was money owed to the Iranians since the 1970s, when they paid the U.S. $400 million for military equipment that was never delivered because the government was overthrown and diplomatic relations ruptured. After the 2015 deal to restrain Iran's nuclear development, the U.S. and Iran announced they had settled the matter, with the U.S. agreeing to pay the $400 million principal in cash, along with about $1.3 billion in interest. Trump later took the U.S. out of the deal. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their health section. The title, it's by Matthew Perrone, and it was updated April 3rd, 2026. The title, Raw Dairy Farm Recalls Some Cheese Products as FDA Investigates E. Coli Outbreak. Washington. A California dairy producer that health authorities have been investigating amid an ongoing outbreak of E. coli is recalling some of its raw cheese products after initially refusing to do so. Raw Farm of Fresno, California, said Thursday it is voluntarily recalling more than a half dozen varieties of its cheddar cheese made from raw milk. The recalled batches carry expiration dates spanning from May 2026 to September 2026. Interest in and sales of raw milk have been rising in recent years, fueled by social media and growing support from the Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Make America Healthy Again movement. Raw milk has not been pasteurized, which kills germs like E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria, and Campylobacter. The Food and Drug Administration began investigating cases of E. coli food poisoning among people who had reportedly consumed the company's products last month and previously requested a recall. In an update last week, the FDA said it was conducting an inspection of the company's facilities, but had not found positive testing for E. coli bacteria among the company's products. Raw Farm reiterated that point in its announcement Thursday and added that it was conducting its recall under protest and in order to chart a path forward. This voluntary recall is limited to Raw Farm brand cheddar cheese, and no other products are being voluntarily recalled, the company said. The FDA has the authority to order food companies to recall their products when there is a reasonable risk of serious injury or death. But the agency must first give the company the opportunity to voluntarily comply. The FDA said last week that 9 people, including children, have been sickened in the expanding outbreak. Of 8 people interviewed by health officials, 7 reported consuming Raw Farm brand products, according to the FDA. 2 people in 2025 reported drinking Raw Farm milk, and 5 people in 2026 said they ate or were served Raw Farm raw cheddar cheese. Genetic sequencing of E. coli strains from sick people show that they are closely related, indicating people in the outbreak share a common source of infection, the FDA said. The federal government does not allow the sale of unpasteurized milk across state lines for human consumption. States have widely varying regulations regarding raw milk, with some allowing retail sales in stores and others allowing sale only at farms. Some states allow so-called cow shares, where people pay for milk from designated animals, and some allow consumption only by farm owners, employees, or non-paying guests. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their health section. The title, CDC pauses dozens of types of lab testing during evaluation and in wake of downsizing, by Mike Stoeb, updated April 1, 2026. New York. The federal government's disease tracking agency has paused its diagnostic testing for rabies, monkeypox, and a number of other infectious diseases. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention this week posted a list of more than two dozen types of testing that have become unavailable. This is not the first time the CDC has paused some of its lab testing, but it is pausing more kinds of testing than ever before, and it is not totally clear why, said Scott Becker, chief executive officer of the Association of Public Health Laboratories. A government spokesman caused the pause temporary and attributed it to a routine review to uphold our commitment to high-quality laboratory testing. We anticipate some of these tests will be available through CDC labs again in the coming weeks. In the meantime, CDC stands ready to support our state and local partners to access the public health testing they need, said Andrew Nixon of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the CDC. CDC's laboratory operations were faulted during this COVID-19 pandemic, and they were the subject of a subsequent work group's review. The agency has been evaluating its testing since 2024, Becker said. But there can be other reasons for taking tests offline, including staffing issues, he noted. The pausing of lab testing comes in the wake of the dramatic downsizing of the CDC in the last year through layoffs, retirements, resignations, and the non-renewal of temporary appointments. Staffing fell by 20 to 25%. According to different estimates, and was felt across the agency, including the laboratories. The pox virus and rabies labs lost about half their prior staff, and the CDC's malaria branch was gutted even more, according to the National Public Health Coalition, an organization of former and current CDC workers that formed in the wake of the downsizing. Some of the pause testing focuses on common infections for which commercial testing is available, like Epstein-Barr virus and the varicella-zoster virus behind chickenpox and shingles. But also on the list is testing for some more exotic agents, like for parasitic worms responsible for snail fever and for the virus that causes sloth fever. Some specialized state labs, like those in the New York and California, have the ability to pick up the slack while CDC tests are on pause, Becker said. He called the pauses concerning only if it's permanent. Hello. Today is April 9th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their business section. The title, When Stock Markets Are Rattled, Even by War, It Usually Pays for Investors to Be Patient, by Stan Cho, updated March 27th, 2026, New York. When stock markets are as manic as they've been recently, it's natural to want to do something to protect your retirement savings. Historically, though, staying calm has usually been best. The U.S. stock market has a track record of recovering from every steep drop it's taken, whether it's a global financial crisis, a trade war, or a military war. The S&P 500 has so far always recouped its losses to push toward more records. Of course, that can take years, but anyone who moved their 401k investments out of stocks risked missing out on the recovery and further gains. Will that happen again? No one can say for sure, and some things are different this time around. But many professional investors and strategists are sticking with the advice they usually give. As long as it's money you don't need soon, which should never be in stocks in the first place, try to be patient and ride out the stock market's swings, tough as it is. They give the same counsel after President Donald Trump unveiled his global tariffs on Liberation Day last year, after inflation skyrocketed in 2021, and after COVID crashed the global economy in 2020. Stomaching these kinds of shocks is the price of admission to get the bigger returns that stocks can offer over the long term. War worries. The war in Iran is slowing the global flow of oil and causing extreme swings in markets. The fighting has halted most of the traffic in the Strait of Hormuz, a narrow waterway off Iran's coast, where a fifth of the world's oil sails on a typical day. That has sent oil prices as high as $119 per barrel occasionally, up from roughly $70 before the fighting started. If the war continues until the end of June, strategists at Macquarie say the price of oil could reach $200 per barrel. The record is just above $147, set during the summer of 2008. If oil prices stay high a long time, the effect would carry far beyond gasoline pumps. It could also push businesses that use any trucks, ships, or planes to move their products to raise their own prices. It would also make electricity from gas-fired power plants more expensive. The swings are adding up. The S&P 500 fell to a fifth straight losing week, its longest such streak in nearly 4 years. It's roughly back to where it was in August, and it's 8.7% below its record set earlier this year. Stock market swings, concerns over AI's impact, confusion around tariffs, and the Iran war have kept Wall Street in flux. S&P 500 percentage change year-to-date in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the NASDAQ Composite, meanwhile, have both already dropped more than 10% from their own records. That's a steep enough fall that professional investors have a name for it, a correction. It's not just how much the market has dropped that's unnerving. It's also how unsteady the moves have been. The U.S. stock market yo-yoed repeatedly through this past week as hopes rose and fell about a possible end to the war. This stock market doesn't often behave exactly like this, but it has a regular history of falling to steep losses before rising again. The S&P 500 has seen a decline of at least 10% every year or two. Often, experts view them as a culling of optimism that could otherwise run overboard and drive stock prices too high. I believe getting a correction is not a bad thing, said Anne Mulletti, head of equity investments at Allspring Global Investments. In some ways, I feel like that is what keeps the market from having a bigger issue. It keeps all of us honest, she said. Should I sell now? Selling your stocks or moving your 401k investments away from stocks and into bonds may offer less chance of seeing huge drops. But getting out of the market would also mean having to figure out the right time to get back in, unless you're willing to give up any future recovery and gains. Timing the market correctly is always difficult. Some of the best days in the U.S. stock market's history have been clustered in among downturns. Some recoveries take longer than others, but experts often recommend not putting money into stocks that you can't afford to lose for several years, up to 10. Emergency funds for things like home repairs or medical bills should not be invested in stocks.